You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Cleveland! This is for you!
Welcome everyone to Locked On Cavs. This is Brittany Mollis. I'm guest hosting. I just hijacked everything, so I'm here with Chris and Evan. Hi guys.
Hey, how's it going on?
Does this feel weird to you?
Yeah,
it feels about like it feels like when Chris first brought me on and I was really stiff. Shout out to your network guys, the Chase Down, Carter and Justin can attest. I was incredibly stiff the first time they had me on, so it's gonna probably feel like that for a little bit. It's a little off kilter for me.
Yeah, Justin and Carter, hi guys, they're my friends too.
Are you team Carter or team Justin?
I'm team both. Although I've never met Carter, I met Justin once in a drunken stupor.
Yeah, that sounds right.
That's all right, Justin too, so that's fair.
All right guys, are you ready
for the Brittany
hijacking of Locked On Cavs?
Put my hat on backwards, that's how serious I am right now.
All right, so I have a list of questions because you know, I'm just a casual fan. I wouldn't say I'm a casual fan, but I view you guys as like experts. You cover this. You spend a lot of, don't laugh. You guys spend, you know, you both do a great job covering this team. Big fans of both of you, honestly. Aww. Yeah, duh. Chris, I even read your newsletter.
Look at that. Look, yeah. This is a live, not paid for testimonial. The ineligible man downfield newsletter.
My face is genuine right now.
Great new Cleveland sports newsletter. Subscribe for free on Substack. Thank you.
Yes, definitely do it. They do a great job with that. All right, so question. How do you guys think Dan Gilbert and Kobe Altman have done in the post-LeBron era?
Chris, do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
Okay, I'll just say this. I think there's two answers to this. There's one track where they've done better than last time because last time they didn't do good. The draft evaluations post Kyrie were bad. They had to get really lucky to even get Kyrie. Like, if they don't get, like, obviously the trade to get that pick to get Kyrie was the right trade. But if they do not get Kyrie Irving in that draft, and it's like you come away with like Tristan Thompson and like, you know, I mean, if it's Brandon Knight even or something, like, you're not going to be the same caliber of team. And when if you get LeBron back in the same way, like, constructing a title win is just going to be much, much more difficult. You know, I mean, they obviously made other misses. Like, I mean, Deion was ultimately, I think, a miss. Anthony Bennett, obviously a miss, but didn't work. And then they tried to rush the playoffs by paying for Earl Clark, Jarrett Jack, and Andrew Bynum. That just didn't work. That was trying to rush something that wasn't there. I actually think this upcoming summer is a little different now because of the coronavirus and stuff. But I actually think this summer, in terms of the way JB's talking about it, the way that Colin Sexton has talked about it, this is like the same summer of that. It's like, are they going to rush into trying to do something they're not ready for? And this is where we're going to learn if they learned a lesson or not, because they've made some mistakes since then. John Beilein hire was a clear mistake. I would argue the end of the Ty Lue era was not properly handled in a lot of ways. But you got Colin, you know, Darius, Kevin, all these guys have shown more potential than a lot of the guys you took last time. But this is the summer, I think, this summer and next summer, where we're going to see what if they actually have learned anything and if they're going to like rush into something that's not there. So I'm going to say kind of done better, but still jury's out.
I'd say they did. At least Dan's done a lot better. He didn't write a letter the second time LeBron left town. Instead did the classy thing and just thanked him for his services. And the Cavs did a nice video tribute when LeBron came back, and I think everything's gravy. And I think they don't have to use a jersey retirement ceremony as a cover to pitch LeBron to come back for a third time around, so that Dan's doing okay. Still was willing to shell out the dosh to market and pay for a very bad basketball team last year, and obviously the Cavs are trying to cut salary this year and next year to get them underneath that luxury tax threshold and maintain that status below that, just so you're not paying into the luxury tax for a rebuilding squad, which is admirable. But Kobe is a bit of a mixed bag. We touched on this in the last podcast a bit, Brittany, where you said you feel bad for him because he gets put in an unfortunate situation because Griff was the architect of that championship team. And I think before LeBron left, that was one of Dan's biggest mistakes in the second LeBron era was letting Griff go. And then the Kyrie trade, I feel like, you know, would just go hand in hand with each other there. But Kobe's just been kind of having a rough go of it for the most part. And I can't say he's really doing a lot of asset accumulation. I feel like he, like Chris said, they're trying to maybe vie for the playoffs. Maybe this is the franchise's MO at this point. And I think the Andre Drummond trade is reflective of that, where Drummond fits into the timeline, at least in terms of age, and he is an all-star caliber player. Maybe the Cavs can kind of cap themselves out as a 7-8 seed in that regard if they keep him and Kevin, and just kind of see what they do in the draft this summer. But there's the potential there with the young talent, and then you have like complimentary pieces like Larry Nance and Jetty Osman, and then Dante Exum, who we don't talk about enough, who could be a solid enough backup point guard when healthy. But I think Kobe's doing the right things, and I think he's made a lot of smart trades, especially last season when he did the financial maneuvering to acquire Brandon Knight and Matthew Dellavedova and Alec Burks, and then he flipped it all and acquired Marquese Chris and all these in that first round pick from Houston, which ended up becoming Dylan Windlake. I think those are like smart, logical moves that the Cavs are doing. I need to see more of it before I can really say, like, yeah, Kobe Altman's doing a good job, because I think David Griffin also is a really tough act to follow.
Sure. All right, so what I'm hearing is that Kobe Altman is awesome. So
there you go. That's fair. Look, here's the thing, though. He could do something like take James Wiseman at number one in June, and then things just like go downhill quickly. He could be like, I'm going to give Andre Drummond a max contract right away. And I'll say this: I think one thing that he has, if you want to actually have like a real thing that he's done well, that I think is overlooked with him, actually, if I'll say something nice about Kobe. All the contracts go down. Like Kevin Love's goes down over time. Larry Nance's goes down over time. He's done a good job of giving them flexibility to work with. That may be even more important now, but like as when the Colin extension comes up, when other deals are coming up, all of these deals like are going to be cheaper as that goes on. And there's even an escape hatch in Jetty's contract, which I can't believe Jetty's agent agreed to, that basically the last year of his deal is non-guaranteed if the Cavs don't want to pay him to it. And like, that's really team friendly. I don't know. Again, I don't know why Jetty's agent was like, that's fine. Like, that's cool. But for the Cavs, like if Jetty just flames out too, or like they just need to clear cap space for whatever reason, like that, there's a really easy way to create $9 million in flexibility. And that's just like good finance bro stuff from Kobe.
Yeah. So now that we've established that Locked On Cavs is now a Kobe Altman / Colin Sexton stan account.
Kobe Altman, come on, coward.
Second question. For the most part, it feels like a lot of pieces, you know, are trying to find their identities. So, experts, how long do you think it will be before we start seeing results? Results that fans could get excited about?
I want to say 2 years tops. Okay. I think the Cavs, we touched on this in the last episode we recorded together. I feel like the Cavs are still trying to find their way onto the path that leads to the direction of where they want to head. Like they're a couple steps back where they want to be. Chris put it really well. They need to learn how to crawl and walk before they can start running and start thinking about the playoffs. And they're just kind of in talent acquisition mode where you find good players like Colin Sexton and Darius Garland and Kevin Porter and Dylan Windler and Jetty Osman. And like those five players are a nice part of your young core. Then you have Larry Nance, who's a hometown kid and a great complimentary piece. And I think a great, awesome asset off the bench. And then Andre Drummond is a player you take the swing, you swing for, and maybe it works out. It doesn't work out. If not, you have a really hefty expiring contract to acquire more assets at the trade deadline this year. And then Kevin Love is kind of the linchpin in this. If the Cavs can get something decent in return for that, and I'm starting to have my doubts that they will, like that's a big thing. But at this point, the Cavs are still trying to figure out who they are and what they are. And then maybe in 2 years' time, like once they clear their books a little bit, they add complimentary veterans in free agency that really just play to the strength of this young core. And then maybe then you can start selling on the fact that they're going to be a playoff squad. But like next season, I don't think it's realistic, especially with how talented next year's draft class is. I think the Cavs want to be firmly in that situation where they can grab a top five talent. And then maybe that following year, they start thinking like, okay, maybe we can start floating at the playoffs. And then the year after that, sure, why not? I'd buy it then, because I'd rather be a consistently good playoff team with signs of potential growth instead of the Cavs landing on like a treadmill of mediocrity where their absolute ceiling is a second round exit where they are crushed by a team who is patient and patiently built up from the ground, either through the draft and maybe a little bit of free agency. Like, you can't rush this process, and that's my fear with them. And that's why I'm saying, like, next year, not the playoffs, the year after that, maybe the playoffs, but the year after that, yeah, I could see them being a playoff team.
It's 2 years if Kevin Porter Jr. and Darius Garland and Colin and whomever they draft, like, take leaps in ways that gets them to being the team leaders. And it's not it, like, Kevin Love is probably still going to be on the team at that point because of his contract, I would guess. That's
whether he likes it or not.
Especially because if the cap goes down this summer, like, there's just no one's going to be paying for Kevin Love at that number. So you need to get to a point where he's not clearly – like, he's getting clear help from these guys, and he kind of trusts them. I think he's getting there. I think, like, his attitude has shifted a little bit. But if you look at next year, here are all the teams that I would just say are locks to be better than the Cavs in the East. The Bucks, the Raptors, the Celtics, the Heat, the Pacers, the 76ers, the Nets. The Nets, by the way, who are getting back Kevin Durant, okay? The Orlando Magic, the Washington Wizards, who we'll see that this is where it gets a little shaky, but then you get into the Hornets – and the Bulls.
And then
the teams that I don't trust, the Knicks. No one should. The Pistons are bad. And the Hawks, we'll see. They were a disappointment this year, but they have Trey. And Trey is, I think, a little better than anyone the Cavs have right now, at least offensively. He's a disaster defensively. I think this is 2 to 3 years, and I think a lot of it is just – I think it a lot of it involves you actually getting development out of the guys. I think – can't rush it. The Cavs have not made the playoffs – in like over 20 years without LeBron James. It is a fact about Dan Gilbert that he wants to make the playoffs without LeBron. That's why you have JB and Colin saying this stuff and putting that out there. But it's still a little bit away. I think if being in competition for the 8 seed is your goal and that's how you're going to define success, I think that's 2 to 3 years at minimum. If things go badly, like if Darius Garland ends up sucking in year two, or like Kevin Porter Jr. hits like a weird wall, like, and or you take the wrong guy this June, like, this gets a little dicier. Like, this, I really think this next 12 months will tell us a lot about where this is going. You could ask me this in next April, and I could tell you, like, they're ready to take that leap, but I also could tell you, like, this team's like screwed for the next 5 years. I really could. There's so many different ways it could still go, I think.
All right. Well, that means you guys have to let me take over next April too, and okay, I can ask you this question again. Right now. this wasn't on the sheet, but question, how do you feel about JB Bickerstaff? Do you think that was a good hire?
Yeah.
Oh, love. Yeah, I love it.
I love competency, and the JB Bickerstaff hire is some semblance of competency. He may not be the best option, but he's a hell of a lot better than John Boeheim because the team actually respects him and will listen to him and respond to him. And that's a lot better than what the Cavs are at for the first 54 games of the year.
Could have done better. You had the best version of a JB Bickerstaff-like coach in Ty Lue already. I will stand by that. That Ty would have actually – like, if you could have just figured out what was going wrong there and kind of been on the same page, like, I think Ty would have been a good coach for the Cavs for, like, 10 years. Obviously, the health concerns and all that stuff that – and we'll see how – and I think he'll probably be happier for himself, like, coaching the 76ers or the Nets next year, which seems like where this is going to end up for him. But I think for what the Cavs are and for just a guy who actually, like, you can just tell that everyone in that locker room, when you talk to them about JB, that they trust in him more than they trusted in Beeline, and that mm-hmm. matters. Like, even Colin Sexton – Evan and I have talked about this. When your second-year point guard – who frankly did play for a former NBA head coach in college, so there probably is something there to this. But when he's like, John Beeline doesn't understand the rhythm of an NBA season, and JB does, and that's the biggest thing he noticed.
That's a huge damnation.
That is the biggest thing, and I think frankly that's more telling than anything. So I think it's a good hire. I'm pro JB Bickerstaff.
All right, we're gonna take a quick break, and then we'll be back with the experts.
From an early morning breakfast burrito to a 12-pack of beers while you watch the game, well, when you could, sometimes you just need what you need delivered fast, and that's where Postmates comes in. If you're like me, you probably start thinking about what to eat for dinner while you're eating lunch. I mean, if you look at me, you really get that idea. I love food, and that's why I love using Postmates. They deliver food from every restaurant I can think of right to my door. For a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use code LOCKEDONNBA. That's code LOCKEDONNBA for $100 of free delivery credit with no minimum purchase for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Oh my gosh, I almost lost my breath from the excitement. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it, baby.
And we're back. I've hijacked the mic. I'm doing the interviews. This is Brittany Mollis, by the way. We are talking about all things Cavs. We're not just talking about Colin Sexton here. Actually, I don't think I have one Colin Sexton question on here for you because I'm the expert on Colin Sexton, obviously. So, all right. Let's see. What else do I have for you guys? What has been the most encouraging part of this rebuild? Also, what would you guys say is the most discouraging so far?
I would say that they're still willing to spend money, actually, is a pretty encouraging thing. That's not nothing. I think Dan has a lot of issues as an owner. We talked about some of them in the last podcast we did. But I think that like being willing to spend a record amount of money to get Kevin Porter Jr., is like something other teams wouldn't have done, frankly. Mm-hmm. Like they spent a lot of money to get a guy who some teams didn't want to draft who, you know, like you had to pony up to get that guy. So I like that. And I think too, you would have had other owners been like, I don't want to pay Andre Drummond or risk that. So let me just let Brandon Knight and John Henson's salaries wash off the books and we can do something else. I think that part of it is actually pretty encouraging that Dan has been willing to spend money. But I think the clear highlight is Colin Sexton. Like there's no doubt about it that he's right now the most interesting young guy they have, and with Kevin Porter Jr. number two.
Great answer.
What about the bad, Chris? You have to give
John
me bad
hiring John Beilein was an objectively stupid decision.
Yeah.
And if you go back, this is something that was fated to happen. It's like the college coach version of hiring David Blatt, and that was just an objectively stupid thing to do.
Shout out to David Bizzle, former Cavs coach. Having naked powwows with LeBron. But the good for me, yeah, I agree with Chris's point in the fact that Dan's willing to spend even when the team's going to be an absolute tire fire for the next few years. And are you done? My dog's scratching. So, anyways, 3-2. I agree with what Chris said in the fact that Dan's willing to spend when the team's an absolute tire fire. It's just definitely refreshing the fact because, like, you can have an owner like the Rockets where he can barely afford to run the Rockets as a whole. And that's definitely something nice to have in your back pocket where you have a team, an owner who's willing to spend, who maybe, like Chris said, is hell-bent and determined to say that he can make the playoffs without LeBron being on the roster. And, Chris, let's also just be fair that his last white whale was hiring a college coach to be his head coach, and we all saw how that went. So maybe the Cavs making the playoffs without LeBron will be, like, Dan's come to Jesus moment where he realizes maybe he's not as smart as he thinks he is. But
are you also like laying the groundwork for Cavs coach Keith Dambrot? Is that what you're doing to me?
Listen, Keith Dambrot, coach LeBron James at St. Vincent St. Mary.
Like, is that what you're trying to do to me here?
And he whooped your sorry alma mater's ass in the MAC tournament.
I have an OU shirt on today, weirdly.
I don't have my Akron stuff on today because I don't. But anyways, so the good stuff of that, and obviously like Colin Sexton and Kevin Porter are great, but I think the fact that the Cavs are able to, and I think Kobe learned this a lot from David Griffin, and the fact that he can make something out of nothing. Like when the Cavs made the moves they did to acquire that pick from Houston, like I didn't think that Kobe had a lot of options going into the trade deadline and just everything else. It came like Alec Burks and Brandon Knight and Marquise Chris and everybody else, every other piece of the Cavs moved in order to make this happen. Like, that's refreshing and that's encouraging. And the fact that the Cavs are willing to make moves to maybe their lateral moves and maybe their minor moves, like they're not home run plays, they're singles or maybe even a double if a player is really, really good. But the Cavs are willing to make moves to acquire assets in order to improve themselves now and in the immediate future. And I think that's really great. And the negative, yeah, no, John Beilein is pretty bad. But letting this Kevin Love situation fester as bad as it did, and then pretend everything, and then releasing a blanket statement to the media that everything is totally fine and there's nothing to worry about, like, that's not a good thing. Like, clearly everything's not okay, because this is when Chris and I were first starting this show. I said, like, I'm not an idiot. Like, I was born at night, but I wasn't born last night. But, like, you can read on this guy's face that he is pissed to be stuck here. And, like,
Rome is burning,
say, like,
Evan.
Rome is burning. And you can say, like, yeah, he signed the
Do you know about that, but... Do you know about what, when we say Rome is burning?
No.
So there was an article I don't want to shame the person. There's an article in a paid sports site that you have to pay for. It's like the whole thing.
All right, yeah.
That compared the Cavs situation to Rome being on fire. And I just started cackling reading this. And I'm pretty sure I sent it to everyone that I could think of. It was like, look, this is incredible. Because Rome was not burning. The Cavs were just an incompetent, normal, competent organization.
Oh, that's another good thing. JB makes them competent. That's what I like. Okay. So maybe this is a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed. I probably jinxed it.
Frankly, with the lowlights, there's just a lot of stuff you could pick. You could pick, like, depending on where you want to start, like, you could start it with, if the quote unquote rebuild, sort of, I think correctly, if you want to label the transition period as starting the last LeBron season,
it's not a rebuild,
you could say, like, the whole Kyrie situation is like its own botch thing.
Yeah. I'd agree with that.
You could go all the way back there and be like, that's the worst thing they did, because that set the tone for everything. And of course you get Colin out of it, but like it seems like you could have at least got more out of, like, going back and having to renegotiate with them. You know, you could, like, Ante Zizic is like a nice enough human being, but he's not going to be on the team in 6 months. He was a sweetener in that team.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I think every Cavs fan, except maybe me, probably would have liked to get more out of that Kyrie deal, because I got what I wanted.
Hey, your guy Kobe asked for Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown.
I mean, shoot your shot, him, you know.
Slap it.
Why not?
Like, just laying it all out on the table saying, give me one of your best young players. And the Celtics politely declined. So shoot your shot, like Chris said.
All right, question.
Answer.
I'm going to add – now I need you guys to do, like, role play for a second. Put yourself in someone else's shoes, okay? Ready? How would you feel if you were Kevin Love or Tristan Thompson?
Evan, who do you want to be? We'll just take one.
You can be Tristan, because
– okay. All right. So if I'm first? Tristan,
yeah,
I'm pretty good with everything, because
a Kardashian.
I've been really good at basketball. I've had a rebound year this year. The last year and a half has been like a turnaround for me. I've played at a high level. I've been healthy. I've been the quote unquote good soldier in the locker room. You know, I think along with Deli is the guy. I mean, if I'm Tristan Thompson, it's me and Deli sort of being the good vets in the locker room right now. We're the guys kind of doing that. So when I think about that, and I know that my time is coming to an end, I hope that I'm properly honored in some way, even if the season, or if I hope that, like, I can end this on good terms. But I sort of know that I'm going to be going somewhere else. And I think I've at least given I've done the best that I could. I got my big deal, and now I'm going to go try to win another title. Because when you trade it for Andre Drummond, you sort of close the door on Tristan being something that makes a ton of sense for me to come back. Like, that is just something that doesn't make sense now that you have Andre, regardless of what I say in the media about us playing together as Twin Towers or whatever.
Well said, Tristan. Well said. That's Kevin Love.
I've enjoyed my last run. I'm going somewhere else. Kevin, it's been a great run together.
This is making me very sad.
I'm going to go try to sign with the Clippers or something.
It's the end of Locked On Cavs. Surprise. as Kevin Love, I do have sympathy for myself as not Evan talking on behalf of Kevin Love. The fact that I do believe that maybe the front office and organization did sell him a bit on a false bill of goods. They sold a lot of veterans on that regard last year when he signed that extension. The Cavs would be kind of a contending for a playoff spot even after LeBron, but I don't think that's really realistic at all, especially when you look at the grand scheme of things. Like, these are a bunch of players that were tailor-made to play alongside LeBron, and you need to be realistic with the situation. And if I was Kevin Love and I am in this situation, I would definitely take a page out of Tristan's book that I need to maybe not come to practice and throw a temper tantrum or be a total asshole to everybody just to try and demand a trade and expose my coach for his old age and the fact that he might be racist. I don't know. But I think maybe if Kevin played the company guy a bit more like he did when he was the target for the media for being the fall guy for everything, like he was the fall guy then, he could have been a lot more patient now. I think it would have been a lot easier for the Cavs to get rid of me, and hopefully they can this summer. But from what my agent and other people are telling me, it doesn't seem like it's going to happen, and I'll be calling Cleveland home next fall or whenever the basketball season comes back.
Excellent answer, Kevin and Tristan. You guys did great. All right, we're gonna take one more break, and then I got some more great questions for the experts. So hold on. And we're back. All right, guys, are you ready for more, or have you had enough?
No, let's go. Let's do it.
All right. This is actually a random question because we briefly mentioned Rich Paul in the first episode, correct? So yes. When the Cavs drafted Darius Garland, the reason I was initially against it, and it wasn't because, you know, he's a guard and, you know, obviously I'm in love with Colin Sexton, but it was because down the road I was looking and I was like, oh no, Rich Paul's his agent. Like, this is going to be, he's a great agent for players, maybe not the best for teams. How do you guys feel about that?
Oh, I absolutely agree. Yeah. If you are a college kid coming into the NBA draft, get Rich Paul as your agent. He'll take good care of you financially no matter what. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Rich seems like he's a power broker in the NBA, and he ruffles a lot of feathers with a lot of agents who have been grinding this for so long. But he learned from the best. LeBron put his full faith in him, and I don't think LeBron regrets it at all. So, yeah, he's not team-friendly for sure, but he'll definitely take good care of his clients. And I think in a player empowerment league like that, that's the exact agent you're looking for.
I will say from the Cavs' perspective, they have had a long time working with Rich Paul. If you go back to when they were trying to get LeBron back, like the back channeling for that was through Rich. And if you look at the roster the last couple – Jordan Clarkson was a Rich Paul client, is a Rich Paul client. Tristan Thompson, J.R. Smith, I believe, was.
Yes, he was.
There's a lot of guys they've had come through that are Rich Paul in the Rich Paul world, and obviously LeBron sort of being that, and Rich Paul is the conduit of a lot of those conversations. So I think if there's any team that is like going to be comfortable with that, and I also don't think like – I think it would be – I think we're seemingly past a point now where like where the agents can get guys drafted. And from all accounts, like Rich was kind of pro Darius coming to Cleveland. Like from some of the reporting coming around, that was like Rich was very comfortable with the Cavs as a landing spot. So take that for what you will. But I do think if there's a team that if there's one part of that that I'm good with, it's the Cavs have worked with him for a while and had to negotiate with him for a while. And at the very least, I would rather have that than like an unknown of him. Like if I was a team, you know, maybe I think if you're a team that hasn't had a Rich Paul client who did you go to contract with, it's a little different. But Kobe Altman, having been in the David Griffin regime and Dan himself who negotiates contracts, like they know Rich. Like it's not mm-hmm. I think there's at least some comfort there between those two sides. And it doesn't seem like those two sides, like it's not like those two sides are on bad terms. I think Darius being linked to the Cavs is a reason to think that, you know, that they're or coming to the Cavs the way he did is reason to think that those sides at least have a good work relationship. So it is what it is. I mean, but Evan's right in terms of if you are trying to get paid, like put your faith in Rich.
He'll take good care of you. Yeah.
So you made me feel better because I was like, oh no, like this kid's going to be a star and then he's going to leave and everyone's going to be hurt. So, you know,
LeBron's the real indicator of that. But like, John Wall signed a Supermax with the Wizards, so.
And LeBron is one of one.
Yeah, LeBron
that's the thing too. Like LeBron is one of one. Like I think when we think about this, in terms of guys leaving and guys not, LeBron James is one of one that he can go wherever he wants. It's him and like Kawhi and KD and like stuff. They can go wherever they want. But for the Cavs, like drafting him and him dictating your franchise is going one way or the other. he's the only guy that can really do that. With a guy like Darius Garland, like, number one, you have him on his rookie contract right now. Number two, when he gets to his second contract, you have all the ability to retain him, and he's not going to have the leverage that you do. And, you know, I think with any of the guys that they might draft that are clutch, like, you have the advantage of knowing that, I think, if you really like them and you have the inside track on them, it's not LeBron who can go former super team somewhere. The odds of those guys being that good and kind of leaving in the same way is not the case. And if I remember correctly, I don't think Rich was his agent when he did the decision.
No, it was somebody from CAA. Yeah.
So it's, yeah, Rich is, if any, Rich, who is agent, his office is in Cleveland. Like, when the guy from Michigan State on, who plays for the Hornets now, Miles Bridges, living in Cleveland that whole summer. Like, if you a couple times you go to the airport,
yeah, his office is right across the street from East 4th Street. It's
right
there. It's weird because you can see, like, Clutch Sports signage everywhere, but they're like, yeah, no one lives there or works there, so it's weird. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so, but I think if anything, like, Rich is I would gather that Rich Paul's advice would not have been, hey, LeBron, go on national television, do an hour interview in front at a boys and girls club, and then rip it. Like, I don't think that would have been Rich's advice. And again, I don't think Darius could be an all-star, could be a really good player for a long time. We don't know. He's a black box right now. But the odds of him being as good as LeBron and being able to dictate that much control are just pretty slim. That's no shade on him. It's just like LeBron is one of one for the Cavs. Like, they will likely never have anyone that of that magnitude. If they do, it's not going to be. It's going to be unexpected, or it's not going to be for a long time. Like, Zion would have been the closest thing you could have gotten, and absolutely didn't happen.
I don't know if you heard me there, but I said it could be Colin Sexton. You never know, Chris.
Yeah, Chris, you never know.
Yeah, you never know, Chris. Come on. See, I'm ganging up. I know how to win when we have guests on. It's just ganging up on Chris. So.
Okay. Next question. Let's see. Okay, so obviously the NBA season has been suspended temporarily due to COVID-19, and I saw that they released some sort of plan moving forward today. Do you guys anticipate that the season will will have, like, playoffs or something, or are they just going to – do you think they're just going to say, you know what, let's try this again next year?
I think it comes back. I think you're getting a tournament in some city. It could be Vegas, could be Orlando. I don't think you're getting the full NBA season. I think teams like the Cavs and I think, like, Colin Sexton would be the first time he would ever, like, get really pissed off would be, like, if he doesn't get to play, because, like, I just, like, want to play basketball. But I think you will get games. I don't know. I think the Cavs are going to get not a lot. They're going to be a team that we see for, like, a minute and then they go away again. But I think you will get them back. I think ultimately, like, stuff, just because there's so much money involved, and that's an unfortunate way of looking at it, but I think just because of that, you are going to get stuff back. I don't know what it looks like exactly. We learned this before we recorded this, that there's some going to be some waiting on opening up facilities, and that's got to be the first thing that happens first. But in terms of the NBA coming back, the WNBA, baseball, the NFL, and college football in the fall, like, I think all that's going to happen in some capacity, because capitalism rolls on, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's the harsh reality of the situation. And yeah, I think they're going to finish the season out. I don't know how much longer the regular season they will have. I do think realistically that you maybe need a week or two of playing as, like, maybe it's like preseason play where you try to get your body back into game shape, and then they play a condensed format of the playoffs, or maybe they do like a 5-5-7-7. Or they do a 5-5-5-7 kind of situation and just kind of roll through this as quickly as possible. Not as quickly as possible, but I do believe, based on what I've heard from people who are closely monitoring the situation in the NBA, that they do want to finish the season. They do want to resolve it. They do want to crown a new champion, because as bad as it sounds, like, the person who I spoke to said there's a lot of compelling storylines coming into this season, like with Giannis and the Bucks and LeBron and the Lakers, and then with Kobe's passing and everything. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on with these teams that they want to have an actual resolution in some way to conclude the season that makes that happen. And like Chris said, I think the Cavs are just going to kind of be a team that gets thrown to the wayside on this, and they're going to be more focused on teams that are geared up for the playoffs. And kind of helps Cleveland's lottery odds, but it definitely frustrates players like Colin Sexton, who just want to go out there and hoop and don't want to push weight sleds up and down his hill in his neighborhood that his parents live in.
Oh, Colin.
Let me ask you this though. Would you prefer the Cavs get like 5 regular season games and go away, or would you prefer they get like 3 regular season games? And I want you both here to do this, and then get to play in like a tournament where it's like if they're the. Let me look at the standings here.
But it's like if you're like a, there's the. I do not want the Cavs to play for a tournament for their draft pick because
That's not what I'm saying. Okay, what I'm saying is they're the 15th team in the East, right? So like. If you're going to have, like, you know how there's, like, the play-in tournament to get the 8th seed and like, that's been a proposed idea? They'd, like, get a chance to play in that tournament. I'd be down for that.
Yeah. Would affect their draft positioning.
I don't know. I just don't want it to be, like, 5. Like, there will be, except for Colin Sexton, because he is a weirdo who just wants to play basketball and then go and shoot more baskets and, like, work out or whatever. So what he does.
I've spoken to, like, is super content.
Kevin Love is going to show up and be like, I got 5 games and I'm out of here. I'm going to go hang out with my dog and Kate Bach. Like, I'm going to go chill. Andre Drummond's going to like do whatever Andre Drummond does. Like, there's not going to be like a high level of motivation if there's like no stakes. Not that there was a ton of stakes anyway, but this is going to be even less stakes if you get like 5 games and then boom. And especially if you have to ramp back up to play 5 games, like they're going to have you, they can't, a lot of these guys haven't been able to shoot, you know? Like, there's just a lot of incentive. Yeah, there's a lot of problems here.
Yeah. No, I'm all for it playing. That would be, for me as a fan, you know, I think we're all kind of just hungry for any kind of sports, really. So if they did like a play-in thing, oh, I'd be all about that.
Exactly.
I'm all for play-in. If it affects draft positioning, I hope the Cavs just kind of pull a yoink on the situation and just say, you know what, guys, there's always next year. It's a Cleveland mantra, so there you go. But
The draft, like the lottery and stuff, it's so. Do you guys like the way that they changed the lottery, by the way?
No, I host the Cavs at a Zion, so absolutely not.
It is what it is. I don't.
Whatever.
I don't. I don't know if I can't say I've like thought about it enough to where like I care one way or the other. It is what it is. I'm pro more chaos in the lottery. That's what I would say. I'm pro, like, give me weird lotteries. And if the Cavs, I mean, the Cavs have obviously the benefit of some weird lottery luck. So I'm pro that just happening because it is really fun when it happens. It's more fun when it's that versus chalk. Like, the Pelicans winning it last year was a lot of fun. Like, getting to see David Griffin just like win another lottery was just like a cool moment.
Yeah.
Leaning into my camera a little bit, judging you. It wasn't fun for me to watch that Cavs team last year and then to watch them drop to 5. To watch the Lakers, the Grizzlies, and the Pelicans jump them.
You just imagine John Beilein coaching Zion Williamson. That's all I'm asking. That's all I'm talking.
I don't think they'd hire John Beilein. That's not true, because they hired John.
They would have hired John Beilein.
They hired John Beilein the day of the draft lottery because one of the Cavs executives gave me a high five and yelled Johnny B, and I'm like, ha, yeah, I guess.
I was all aboard the John Beilein train, by the way.
I think
I was too. But
yeah, I was.
Yeah, not what you want.
Yeah. All right, one more question, and this isn't really Cavs related. It's more just basketball stuff, but I wanted to get your opinions on it. The Last Dance, how do you guys feel about it so far? We're 4 episodes in now.
Evan, you go first.
I love it. I think it's a lot of fun. The first 2 episodes were a good introductory point, but where they focused on Rodman and they focused on Phil Jackson. I was actually talking to a friend about this on his podcast. Because he was asking me, like, well, how does it compare to, like, LeBron and MJ? And I'm like, oh, I was drawing parallels, actually, while watching it last night, where I thought, how wild it would be in today's NBA for a player to ask his head coach, can I please have 48 hours to just get everything out of my system in Vegas?
And then go hang out with Carmen Electra in Las Vegas.
Yeah, there's worse people to hang out with in Vegas, Chris.
That's a power move. It is a power move.
But more so the fact that MJ broke into his room and she hid from him, which is even funnier. But I just think, like, you do draw comparisons to, like, this quote-unquote Last Dance team and this Bulls team, like LeBron. I'm like, yeah, LeBron and MJ, sure, you put those two on the same page. And then you have, like, JR and Rodman here. I'm like, yeah, no, I don't think JR would pull a stunt like that. Because I remember when he came to Cleveland, he said all I really can do is play Xbox and go to bed early. And I'm like, yeah, it's actually really reassuring. But no, that was absolutely wild. And I think I would love just a deep dive into Phil Jackson's, like, philosophy and coaching, because I used to coach basketball, and the way, like, that he manages egos and players, I think, is fascinating. And definitely Ty Lue was one of those players like that for the Cavs as well, or coaches for the Cavs as well in that regard. But I would definitely love to see where this is going. And no, like the Rodman stuff was just absolutely wild. And I could not believe that they actually agreed to let that happen.
That was crazy. I also like when Phil Jackson had that moment with Dennis Rodman where they had like that Native American connection in his office. That was really cool. I wasn't expecting that.
No. Yeah, I also like Phil Jackson just like openly them being like, yeah, he was just like doing drugs and then like would like go out on the town in the 70s playing for the Knicks. That's like extremely hilarious. Just like dropping acid.
I just remember when somebody asked him about peyote, he's just like, you don't smoke peyote. And I'm like, okay, well, this is a guy who does stuff. So.
I'm pro The Last Dance. I was very young when the Bulls were, I was like very, very young, like 5-something years old when this team is going out. So I don't know a lot of it. There's stuff I've learned going back and reading, but it's just been like really fun to go back and see some of this and like learn some of this. And the level of access you're getting, even though it is, you know, I'm certainly there. I'm waiting for the Jordan looks like a total prick shoe to drop on this. Like, I think that's still to come. Like
one in this episode when he questions Scotty's legitimacy with a migraine.
There's another level to it. Yeah. There's another level to this that I think I'm waiting to see. And I'm waiting for like the Tony Kukoc stuff and whatnot. But like, I learned a lot about Scottie Pippen. You know, I learned a lot more about like cocaine use in the NBA in the 80s, which is a fun Google rabbit hole to go down if you want to just like learn like some really some crazy stories and things that happened related to that. Obviously, Len Bias is like the most famous example of that, but there's a ton of other ones. And the Bulls being called the cocaine traveling circus in a thing. It was great. The lead about Doug Collins that I can't remember was just absolutely harsh. Like if you're reading this, you're probably on the way to work unless you're Doug Collins or whatever that was. I was just like, Doug Collins just got like taken at the throat in the lead of a newspaper story about getting fired. That's rough. But I think it's really good. It seems like we're getting a Kobe one. That'll be like the next something like this, it seems like, which I'm sure will have a different tone considering Kobe's death. I want a Cavs one at some point. I want a LeBron one more than I want that, but I don't know if you would ever get, at least not now. It might be 20 years from now. Mm-hmm. I don't think you're ever getting the level of access you got with MJ behind the scenes with LeBron, because LeBron is so guarded with his image. And that kind of sucks, but I would love to see like some unvarnished LeBron teammate stuff.
I just want to see that last LeBron year. If they have behind the scenes footage, that locker room blow up. It's so TMZ. It's so TLC.
I would pay
Learning
money.
Channel is for reality trash. Like, I would love just to watch Isaiah Thomas go at Kevin Love like, so much.
I would pay money for the post game locker room audio, even, or the footage of them celebrating after they do the trades, and then he's like, it's the game in Boston where they show up with these new parts and just like wreck the Celtics, and like Jordan Clarkson's like celebrating and LeBron's just like having the time of his life. I would love for like the immediate team reaction to that game, because LeBron was just like, they just show up with like parts that no one knows how to work them yet. And they just like absolutely wreck the Celtics, who were like their quote unquote biggest competitor that season. And it was just like hysterical to watch. Like, I don't even remember, like, I couldn't tell you anything other than the game that it was hilarious the way it turned out. And like just the Jordan Clarkson running down the court, like with like celebrating three pointers. It's beautiful. And that season is just bizarre. In so many ways. I would also take one on like a 30 for 30 on, I would take actually a whole documentary on the Cavs ownership. If you look at the last 30 years of it, Ted Stipin to Gordon Gunn to Dan Gilbert is like a really interesting trio of owners. Because Stipin, obviously, horrible owner all time. Gordon Gunn saves the franchise, but then wants out of it at a certain point, and then Dan is Dan. I think that's like a really interesting like ownership trio to think about.
Chris, you have great content ideas. Someone needs to hire you and pay you millions of dollars.
I should probably stop tweeting mean things about Advance Local. but you know,
that's a good start.
All right, guys.
What are your thoughts on The Last Dance? We never really asked you. Ooh. It's rude of us.
Yeah. Oh, The Last Dance. So I was, when I first saw like the trailer back when it came out, I don't know, like over a year ago, one of my biggest fears, I was like, oh my God, what if I tragically pass away before this thing comes out? Because I was so interested in it.
I know. I felt the same way about the real live Lion King too, because it came out so early, and I'm like, oh my god, what if I pass away before I get to see these things? Luckily, you know, that didn't happen. Knock on wood. I'm still here. So like the last week I was, I guess I would say underwhelmed.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah, like last week there wasn't that much that I got excited for. This week I really enjoyed. I loved, you know, obviously Dennis Rodman is such a fascinating human being. So it was nice to learn about where he came from. And mind you, like this Bulls, everything about it, I was very young during this time. And I didn't even start paying attention to basketball until, you know, probably like 2005-ish. So, you know, this was all kind of new, which is cool. You have a bunch of young NBA fans who get to sort of see this for the first time. You know what I mean? So I think they picked a really good time, really good subject. So Dennis Rodman last night was great. Phil Jackson was great. Now I'm at a point now where I just want to learn so much more about both of those two specifically, because they're just so fascinating, which I don't think I'm going to get too much more of.
Yeah, but I think I'm going to focus on Steve Kerr for sure next.
I've had friends that are like, I want to see more Steve Kerr.
Well, Steve Kerr to MJ was like Delhi to Kyrie, from what I've heard. So,
yeah, I don't know.
In practice, at least. So,
can you just say for the record if you think Dennis Rodman is interesting?
He is. I have a crush on him now.
Yeah,
it's a problem.
Robin's 90s is just like, there's an Oprah interview clip going around that I highly recommend viewing. It is like, I can't believe that, like, it is not a bigger deal that a male athlete in the 90s said this on Oprah. Hey, it's amazing. You can find it like pretty easily on Twitter, but it's just like, wow, this is amazing. I can't imagine like anyone like saying anything close to that now.
No. Did you guys see him carrying the open Miller Lite out of the Bulls locker room? And I'm like, wait a minute, that's, no one made a big deal about it then. I'm like, I guess LeBron did carry just a glass of wine to a Lakers game not too long ago. So it's whatever. Maybe time is a flat circle. Maybe LeBron is MJ in this weird scenario. Who knows? But
also, I really liked, you know, that they featured the Piston, like, you know, the Bad Boys. Because, again, these are things that I didn't get to witness when, you know, they happened. So seeing that for really the first time was very interesting to me. So, yeah, there was a lot. These past two episodes, I think, have been my favorite so far, and I hope it gets even better. So I'm not underwhelmed again. But yeah.
The Bad Boys 30 for 30 is very good if you haven't seen it.
I have not seen that.
Very good.
It's very good. It's the other side of the story, and they do touch on the Bulls for a little bit and how, like, they.
A lot of good stuff on the handshake and all that, which is interesting. And Lambeer, a former Cav, is like an interesting character in that. It's very good. It's well worth it's like a good rabbit hole to go down on the heels of the Pistons episode in there.
Ooh, I'll have to check that out. That along with the cocaine circus of the 80s. I'll go down both those rabbit holes after this.
Cocaine in the 80s and the NBA is a wild thing.
All right, guys. Well, thank you for answering all of my questions. My experts.
Hey, you're welcome. Brittany, is there everyone can find you.
You can find me on Twitter at Bird's Eye View. Also my podcast, which is on Blue Wire. It's available on Spotify, Apple, really any kind of platform. It's called That's What B Said, Cleveland Sports Podcast with me and two other wonderful, super knowledgeable ladies. Now, since you're the guest on this show, is there anything that you gentlemen want to plug?
You already did it for me. So an eligible man downfield newsletter.
Yes.
Fear the Sword. We have some fun stuff coming. We're going to do a favorite one and done Cavs thing, which has brought up some interesting names. And stay on the lookout for that.
People claimed a lot of those that I was thinking about. But for me, you can find me on Twitter at AmNotEvan. I'm generally a curmudgeon on there, but I'm willing to just shoot the shit and talk about Cavs and anything else. But hey, no, thanks for listening, everyone. Make sure you listen to That's What B Said. And Chris and I will be back soon with more book club stuff. And again, I expect a report on my desk by 11:59 on Sunday. And I'm really disappointed that Chris included didn't send me a book report. So just throwing it out there. Just the whatever. Okay.
Just chilling.
Thank you guys for coming on the show.